Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning. Welcome to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're going to talk today about negativism. That sounds like a negative topic, and it is. But we'll try to present it in a positive way, perhaps a helpful way. You know, when I was a kid, I was always sort of brought up in a my mom and dad would tell us to quit whining. Don't whine. Stop whining. Don't whine about this. And we, my wife Vicki and I, have done that with our kids growing up. Is, you know, hey, stop whining. No whining. And then I've kind of made a joke out of it with our grandkids and say, you know, there's no whining in my car, and you know, we don't whine at our house, and so forth and so on. And you know, whining is, in a way, is a form of negativism. We've all been around people who are just negative. And I'm not talking about people who are perhaps will bring you bad news once in a while when you need to hear bad news, like when things are not going well with the finances or something, and you perhaps need to hear that. But I'm talking about people, and you've been around people like this too, who never have anything good to say about anything, who look at the bad side of anything, who seem to delight in finding problems. They almost never offer you any solutions. They just point out problems. And there's a great saying attributed to Ben Franklin who says that any fool can tear down, criticize, and complain, and most do. And that's just a truism, isn't it? We're around people who complain all the time. I want to start off today, and not to scare anybody off, but I want to talk to you about a story out of the Bible for a minute. And here at Biz 1190, owned by Salem Broadcasting, you have a number of gospel stations as part of their network, and so you could always turn into one of the other stations here and hear preaching. And I'm not a preacher, and don't try to preach that. But there's a great story in the Old Testament, in the book of Numbers, that really illustrates what I want to talk to you about today. And most of you probably are at least passingly familiar with this. It's after the children of Israel have been led out of Egypt, you know, the big Exodus by Moses, and they've wandered around in this dry and barren wilderness for quite a while, and then now they're being they've approached what's called the Promised Land, the land that God has promised to them, you know, a land flowing with milk and honey, a great land, and they're on the border of it, and Moses picks out 12 men, one from each of the 12 tribes, and these are not just ordinary men. He basically picks out what they call chiefs, men of substance out of each one of these tribes, and they send them into this land to spy it out, the 12 spies, and they come back to report back to what they found, and they say, you know, this is indeed a marvelous land flowing with milk and honey. In fact, there's a story about they brought back a big cluster of grapes. It was so big it took two guys to carry it. So that's a pretty good sized cluster of grapes. And they were just saying, what a marvelous land this is, and it's incredible. And then they said, but however, the inhabitants of this land are just incredibly strong. Their cities are fortified. I don't know how in the world would ever take that. They are. This is a strong and a ferocious people. And in fact, we see in there, there's a tribe of giants in there who we look like grasshoppers next to. And so we don't have any chance whatsoever of taking this land. Now, they gave that report back to Moses, but there were two guys in that crowd of 12, one of them whose name was Joshua and the other one named Caleb, who said, well, we disagree. Yes, it's a great land, and yes, the people there are pretty strong. But this is our land. It's been promised to us by God, and we should go take it. And the response of the rest of the people is very telling. They began to get very negative. All of them did. It got very negative. And just so all of a sudden now, incredible negativism and fear even. They began to say irrational things like, it would be better if we had died in Egypt, or it would be better if we were dead now than what's about to happen to us. here in this land. Just sort of crazy talk. They then became quite hostile, particularly to the two spies that disagreed with them, Caleb and Joshua, and they said, let's stone them. Let's kill these guys. And now think about this a minute. You've gone into a land that you've been promised, great opportunity ahead of you. You get in there, and there are some obstacles. So you come back out, and you focus on the obstacles, and you're saying that, we can't take this land because of the problems that are in there. So you begin to go very negative. You don't know what's going on. And then you begin to sort of have some irrational fear, and the negativism kind of spreads. It spreads around, and pretty soon everybody's caught up in it. And then you begin having these irrational sort of thoughts and sayings. It'd be better if we were dead. How did you go from it's going to be difficult to take this land to I wish it would be better if we were dead? That's crazy. And then you turn into hostility, and it even leads to open rebellion eventually. They begin to talk about, we've got to replace Moses and go back to Egypt where we were slaves. We've got to get rid of, we need to stone Joshua and Caleb, get rid of Moses, and go back into Egypt. Now, think about this a minute. They had left Egypt after each one of the firstborn, if you remember the story, the story of the Passover, where the death angel appeared through Egypt and the firstborn of every Egyptian family died. Well, how welcome do you think they're going to be back in Egypt? Not only that, as they were leaving, remember, Pharaoh's army pursued them, and then a bunch of them drowned. Well, they had families back in Egypt. How excited were the Egyptians going to see them coming back? But they're saying, look, we got to go back to Egypt and be slaves again. Well, just an absurdity. Well, here's the lesson out of that that it illustrates. Is that negativism is contagious. Negativism is contagious. And we've all experienced that, haven't we, at some time or another, where, somebody begins being negative about something, and before long, everybody's negative about it, including you or including me, and even to an irrational sense, perhaps. I was reading the other day, this is interesting, some psychologist had published that a baby can spot a frowning face in a crowd of smiling faces and will focus on the frowning face. So there must be something innate in us as human beings that makes us tend to go negative at times, to tend to focus on the negative. So it's contagious. That's one lesson out of this. The other lesson out of it is that it leads to irrational thoughts. Negativism leads to irrational thoughts. In this case, they said it'd be better off if we were dead. Well, in your circumstance, if you're beginning to be negative about something, perhaps you've been part of an organization or business that's done really well, you get negative about it, and all of a sudden you begin to have irrational thoughts. Maybe we should close the business down or get out of that business, something that's been profitable and worthwhile for you for years. Or let's get rid of these employees who have been valuable employees for a long time, because all of a sudden we've gone irrational because of negativity. It also leads to hostility, and you've all seen that in companies, haven't you? Where that somebody gets negative in a business, and the next thing you know, they're hostile toward the people running the business, or hostile perhaps toward their fellow workers, or perhaps even to you. And perhaps you've been that way with other folks. Again, it's a spiral of being too negative, which finally can lead to absolute rebellion in a company where nothing can begin to happen. That's why I said in the beginning, there are people who always see a glass half empty, who always are negative, and you can't build a company around people like that. And here's the real irony of that, though. Oftentimes, those people are some of the smartest people in your company or organization. And you do, in fact, need their feedback. Even you might need their negative feedback. You just don't need it in the way that they present it. And so part of what we're going to talk about today is how to deal with people like that. How do you, we don't want to be Pollyannish in a way and ignore everything bad around us, because, bad things do happen in companies. And if you've got a problem in your company, you had better pay attention to it. You better know it in the first place. and you better pay attention. But there's a big difference in spotting problems and working toward resolutions and just actively finding problems. And that's true not only in a business, it's true in individuals. You know, if you're looking at any other person and you're trying to find something negative about that person, you absolutely will be successful. If you're in any organization, whether it's a business or a church or a civic club you're part of, or a community organization or anything else, a ball team, if you're looking, actively looking for negative attributes of other people in that organization or on that team, you absolutely will find them. And again, back to business, if you're spending your time in a business looking for problems, and sort of there are people, as Zig Ziglar used to say, there are people who seem to find problems as if there's a reward for it or something. Well, the reward's not in finding problems. The reward's in finding solutions. And that's the difference with a person who is just very negative and has no solutions as to a person who does, in fact, see problems but presents solutions. So we're going to talk about how to deal with people like that, perhaps in a positive way, and perhaps use some of their negativity to your benefit. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on Eddie Mayfield. That's E-D-D-I-E, Mayfield.com. More to come. Stick around. I am Eddie Mayfield. This is Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad that you're here. We're talking about negativity in the workplace or in your organization, whichever it may be, and how you deal with it, and perhaps just some of the fallout from it. You know, whether it is in your business or even in politics or your relationships, perhaps with your friends or family, a negative work environment can lead to disengagement. In fact, I forgot who used the term. I do like a term called active disengagement. And you've all been around people who are actively disengaged. I'm thinking about not in our business sense so much, but even in other organizations like a church or something, where there are people who have disengaged from involvement, but they want to sit on the sidelines and sort of throw grenades. Well, you find that in business too, where they actively disengage. They're not part of any kind of solution. They just want to sit on the sideline and toss bombs and disrupt things that are going on. Well, that's a negative work environment absolutely leads to that. At least a disengagement. It also leads, and if you've got a company with a negative work environment, you're going to have lower retention rates, and particularly you're going to have lower retention rates of positive employees. So it's a self-fulfilling downward spiral because you're going to run off positive people there. That's going to lead to decreased productivity in the business. That's what's going to happen. And it's going to just be misery all around. Inc. Magazine a few years ago did a great article on this that I had referred to. And you know, they talk about, they mentioned in there that there's been some research from the Gallup organization that disenchanted workers who tear down what their engaged colleagues are trying to build up cost the American economy up to $350 billion a year. And I don't know where I'm not privy to that research exactly. They just quote the results of it there. There's a guy named Kurt Kaufman who co-authored a Gallup book called First Break All the Rules. He came up with a term I like for these actively disengaged employees. He called them cave dwellers, and he uses the acronym CAVE to say consistently against virtually everything. And we've seen people like that, haven't you? People who are just against everything. No matter what is coming up, they're actively disengaged, and they're against it. They don't know anything about it, but they're against it, no matter what it is. And, you know, he uses a term that negativity is like a blood clot. And actively disengaged employees tend to clot together. You've seen this too. Like a blood clot. And sort of block off the flow of everything as much as they can. And also they begin to support and reinforce their beliefs with one another. That's what I was telling about earlier about negativism. It's contagious. It's contagious. And we begin to, as we become negative, as we begin sucked into a spiral of negativity, we tend to find other people who are also negative, and then we sort of have a misery party, a pity party together, and we begin to reinforce that negativity in each other's. And there is no good outcome of that. That never has a good outcome. It's not good for you as a person. It's not good for you as a person trying to run a business. And it's not good for your employees. It's not good for your family. It's not good for any organization you're part of. There's no positive output from that. You cannot build things. You cannot grasp the future. You can't seek and land opportunities with people who are actively and negatively disengaged. And so you have to sort of deal with it. It's impossible to avoid occasional negative dynamics in a workplace. It's just not. You know, we're human beings. We have good days. We have bad days. And that's true with me and you and everybody else. We're not always Mr. Positive. And not only are you not always positive, you'd be pretty stupid if you were. There are things you can't be positive about. You know, if you're at work and you just lost a giant job, there's nothing positive about that. You can't say, well, I'm so glad we lost that big job. No, you're not. You're not glad at all that happened. And it'd be silly to say that. So there's a difference between just being blindly and in a silly fashion optimistic, and the other end of the scale where you're always negative and hunting problems because the optimistic person picks himself back up and tries to move ahead and getting going on. Now, one of the things the same magazine article says is I think it's quite interesting. I think this is again they're quoting from Kurt Kaufman here, and he says that in a business, in organization, you should strive for healthy conflict, which sounds like a misnomer, doesn't it? It's a first step toward eliminating negativity is through healthy conflict and debate. It almost sounds like that's not right, doesn't it? That sounds like that couldn't be. That would be counterproductive. But here's the difference. Healthy conflict is focused on increasing your understanding of someone else's position, learning from each other, and finding new solutions. And this is great advice. In other words, healthy conflict is first about inquiring and understanding, and then advocating. But, you know, most of us go into conflicts where we advocate first without any understanding, and that's a negative. That's not a healthy conflict. Healthy conflict is when you go into it trying to understand another person's position. And, you know, just there's something about in a business, perhaps it's different than it would be in a nonprofit or a church or something like that. You do have a very strong driver to resolve conflicts like this and to get rid of negativity at work, and that's the profit motive. That's the reason I love capitalism. You know, I might get my feelings out on a stick and be all upset and hurt about something, and you know, in a civic club type environment. Where at work, you can always come back to me and say, "Eddie, that's costing you a lot of money," and then I'd say, "You're right. We need to fix this. I need to get my feelings off the stick and get myself out of the way a little bit here. And we need to resolve this problem." So I think the profit motive does push you toward a resolution. And believe me, a negative workplace costs you money. It costs you money. So you need to deal with it. And by inquiring what other people think, understanding, and there can be opposing views on an issue, but as long as both sides are having the conflict in good faith, and what I mean by that is both sides are actively trying to do what is best for the company or organization. Now, that's a big difference. Instead of trying to do what is best for me, if I'm trying to do what is best for the organization, another way might be putting it, those of you that like sports, is doing what's best for the team. That changes that conflict from being something negative to perhaps being something positive, because, you know, it may be that my idea of where to go for these opportunities might need a little fine-tuning. I might be not looking at all the facts here, and I have somebody that's sort of debating with me a little bit that's going to force me to look at if I understand why they think the way they think. And instead of getting on my high horse and advocating my position first, I'd truly try to understand, why does that guy think that? Because my assumption is he's disagreeing with me in good faith. And his assumption of me is that I'm disagreeing with him in good faith. And that's a big part right there, is when both parties come to the understanding that we're both trying to do what's best for the organization, best for the company, not what's best for me, what's best for the company. And therefore, you begin to listen to one another and figure out, why does that guy think that way and think differently than me? And then you tend to begin to find common ground. And perhaps by doing that, you perhaps get better insight into what that problems are. And the discussion can be contentious. You know, people are passionate about things, and it often is. But if the passion that you're having in the contention is channeled towards seeking a collective outcome, in other words, channeled toward doing it right, well, then at that point, you're going to end up with a much better positive and not a negative outcome. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. Hope you'll tune in and tell your friends. By the way, streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Eddie Mayfield. That's E-D-D-I-E. We're talking about negative workplaces, but I'm really trying to push it toward not being negative as much as how to take a negative workplace and make it into something positive. And, you know, it can be done. It can be done, especially if you make positivity a core value. Again, back to this Inc. magazine article, that's one thing they say in there, that you should make being positive a core value. We don't think about that much, do we? I can also go back to what I've said many, many times about having friendly employees and so forth. It's a lot easier if during the hiring process you hire positive people, or at least if you avoid hiring terribly negative people. Now, sometimes you don't know that, do you, when you hire people? In the beginning, they put their best face on for you. You can learn to ask a few questions, perhaps, about, get them to tell you about where they worked before, or get them to tell you about a conflict they had, what it was about. Get them to tell you about the last conflict they had with a friend. Get them to tell you about it. You can sort of listen between the lines about what they, how they deal with other people, how they resolve conflicts. And that might tell you a little bit about their mindset and how they do it. But people also change, and also, as I said earlier, there are circumstances where all of us probably are more negative than we should be. We all kind of can walk through those valleys at times. You've probably done it too. The trick is to get yourself out of it. The other trick is also, don't hang around really negative people. If you find yourself being drugged down and feeling really negative, go back and think about the conversations you've been having with people. I do this occasionally. And I'll be kind of weighing over my mind, where did I start feeling negative? And I'll go back to something somebody said to me. I'm thinking, you know, I don't want to dwell on that anymore. Now, maybe if it's about a real problem, we need to deal with it. But back again, negativism is contagious. We know that. Negativism leads to irrational thoughts, which can lead to irrational behavior. It leads to hostility. And finally, it can lead to absolute rebellion inside a company. But it certainly does not push a company forward ever. So you need to try to do that. You know, there's a company called Pluralsight. And here's their core values they talk about. They say, we are truth seekers, entrepreneurs, and eternal optimists. That's interesting, isn't it? It's a core value. Eternal optimists. You know, part of what that is to focus on solutions, not problems. You know, that's a great management technique that I learned years ago from some other people in business. There are always problems in a business. In fact, some of them seem almost overwhelming. And you do have to concentrate some energy on problems. I mean, you can't be silly about things. But if you find yourself in a leadership role, spending all of your time dealing with problems, you need to reallocate your time. Because when you're dealing with a problem, you are not dealing with an opportunity. And you really have to turn that around. Sometimes problems are opportunities. You just have to look kind of hard to see them, don't you? You know, this is, again, borne out by research. And research, it goes back a long, long ways. I remember being told this back in the 70s that the research indicates, and it's still true today, the research indicates you are, if in a customer service type sense, if you've had a customer with whom you've had a bad experience, in other words, if you've had a customer that's had a bad experience with you, I should say, and if you successfully resolve that conflict, and successfully resolve means not to your satisfaction, but to the customer's satisfaction, where the customer feels like you have resolved that conflict, that customer will be a stronger and more loyal customer to you, as a rule, than a customer with whom you've never had a conflict. And we human beings tend to be that way, because it's just part of relationship building, isn't it? You know, it's pretty easy to be a good company when everything's going fine, isn't it? It's when problems pop up that you begin to see who is and isn't a good company. If you prove yourself in that regard. But again, that's just a way of looking at things. We've got a problem with this guy. This is also an opportunity we have to show what we're made of. And again, the idea of concentrate on solutions, not on problems. Again, this isn't about some kind of blind optimism that ignores facts or problems. It's about bringing up challenges in a healthy, positive way. Not a way that points fingers at people, but collaborates with other people to find solutions and to move ahead. Back again, I can't emphasize this enough, hire optimists. Hire optimistic people, and certainly don't hire negative people. I've said many times here in customer service, if you want your employees to be friendly, rather than training them to be friendly, why don't you try to hire friendly people to start with and see if that doesn't resolve the problem? I actually heard Ross Perot say that many years ago. Here's another way to have less of a negative atmosphere at work, and that's be transparent at work. Complete transparency. You know, I've often heard it say that when you don't give people the whole story, they make up the missing part, and it's worse than the real story. That has been my experience in life. It probably is yours as well. But when people feel left out of the loop, they don't know what's going on behind the scenes, it leads to dysfunction and to disengagement. Now, that's true. If you'll think in your own life, that's true with you. You know, when you feel like you have no control in a situation, you don't know what's going on, it sort of engenders negative feelings in you. So as a leader in a business, as much as you possibly can, be transparent. Let people see what's going on in your business. If you're having a customer problem, the employees probably know this already. So tell them, if you're having a problem in the market, like you're having to re-examine your position in a market, your employees probably already know this. So just share your heart with them. Tell them where you are. And what you'll find is they can help you find solutions, and always make it about solutions. Look, we're having this problem. How can we resolve this problem? That brings positivity into it, and it allows people to help and engenders a more positive type atmosphere. You need to allow employees to innovate. You know, it's a big negativity buster, a way to sort of squash negativity is to encourage and empower employees to innovate and create change in your company. And this sometimes means that as leaders, you got to let go a little bit. And you kind of got to let a guy run out there on the edge of the leash a little bit. And I know in my own experience, sometimes that's hard. A guy sort of goes outside the reservation a little bit there, and you're like, whoa, pal. And it doesn't mean you got to let some guy drag your company off in a direction you don't want it going, but it does mean you need to at least give him the leeway to go out there and maybe try it a little bit. We've done several things that way in our company. Some y'all say, hey, I think we ought to do this, and say, all right, look, you can try that, but we're not going to spend a lot of money on that. We're not going to, we're not going to spend $100,000 chasing that down. But if you've got an idea and you can go out there pretty cheaply and give it a whirl, okay, let's give it a whirl. Let's see how that works. And what has happened is some of that has worked very well. Some of it, frankly, has not. But again, you're telling the people under you that you trust them and that you want them to be creative and you want them to make positive inputs into the company and you want them to help find solutions to problems. Well, that's the way you do that. You trust them a little bit and you'll get it out there and get it creative and get things going. Like that. There's in the E! Magazine article, they talk about that you should always try to have fun in your organization. I think fun which is a simple word, isn't it? I think it's one of the most underrated motivators in the world. You know, if you're trying to get anything going, take it out of business a minute. You're trying to get a choir started. You know, the way to get a choir started is to make it fun. And people will want to do it. If you just make it fun, people will want to do it. Your company, as much as you can. Now, look, not all work is fun. We all know this. The bathrooms have got to be clean. Kind of hard to make that fun. But there are many things you can do that are fun. And you can set the example for that by being a fun person and perhaps being a little silly at times. I love to see guys like Warren Buffett and guys like that who will, at a very serious meeting with their shareholders, he'll pull out his ukulele and play some silly song. Or, you know, the head of Chick-fil-A, Dan Cathy, will pull out, or Bubba Cathy, will pull out a ukulele and play and sing some silly song for the employees. Again, just having fun and saying, not lowering yourself, I don't mean that, but taking some taking the seriousness out a bit and saying, hey, you know, we're a serious business. We're very much about our goals and our ambitions here. We want to make profits. We want to do this, one of that. But we want to have some fun doing it, and we value you. I value you enough to let my hair down in front of you. I think that highly of you. And so that's a great way to do it. And here's a sort of the another bottom line, which can be a bit of a negative thing. You may have to come to the conclusion in your company that there are some bad apples, negative people you have got to purge out of the company. That's nothing any of us like doing. It's always been one of my most unfavorite things to do. I don't know anybody that enjoys firing somebody needs counseling, I think. I mean, you just cannot enjoy that. But it's also absolutely necessary. If you have a negative person who never offers solutions, who focuses only on problems, who doesn't get along with anybody else in your company, who causes disruption, well, look, they're hurting you. You've got to do something about it. So you have got, and they're basically, it's like a poison inside your company. And you need to be very fair with them and give them every opportunity to improve that, perhaps even with some coaching from you. It may not just be a matter of you giving them a letter and saying, hey, you need to improve. You may need to coach them a little bit and tell them what you can do. I mean, you know, we've had people before, you know, here's a little scenario. You can say, you know, Fred, at that last meeting, you spent 30 minutes telling us why the new campaign won't work. And look, Fred, any of us can find problems, but we need solutions. And if you have concerns about this project, I want you to express them to me privately, not publicly. I need you to be more supportive of your fellow employees. And maybe you kind of coach Fred through that a little bit, and you give him a chance to correct it. And you know, sometimes people do. They will absolutely correct it. As Jack Welch once said, you have no right, no matter who you are, you have no right to fire an employee with whom you have not given feedback. Terminating an employee should never be a surprise. But there are times when people are negative in your company, there is no other solution, and you cannot have it in the company, and you must purge it out of there. You're listening to Driven to Business. A little more to come. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Hang around. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. As a reminder again, if you missed part of today's program, it will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. So check us out there. Last segment here, I want to go over a Harvard Business Review article from 20 to 12, which is entitled How to Respond to Negativity. I thought they had some good points in here, so I'll just kind of jump right into this and we'll talk about them a little bit. You know, one of they just begin listing some ways to turn around a negative argument. In the first place, countering it, and this sounds counterintuitive almost, but when you encounter a negative person and you sort of counter them with your positivity, somebody says something negative to you and you say, and you give a positive response back and say, no, it's really this way. That doesn't work because it's argumentative. People don't like to be emotionally contradicted. And if you try to convince them they shouldn't feel something, they're going to feel it more stubbornly than they did before. I ran into this myself because I've tried this. You're trying to be positive. It comes off even worse because it looks like you're out of touch and really not in touch with reality. So Here's a couple things they say about it. Sort of a three-step process. First thing is understand how they feel and validate it. Now, this seems that can be hard. Because if somebody's being negative, you don't really want to validate their negative feelings. But the fact is, you're not agreeing with their negativity. You're simply showing them you understand how they feel. Now, there's a big difference in there. I may understand why you feel a certain way about something, but that doesn't mean I agree with how you feel about it. And you can make that point, and you don't need to, and be sure they understand this clearly when you're talking to them. But again, that's why just responding back and saying, they, somebody says something very negative, and you respond back in a positive sense, it's going to sound very argumentative, like you do not understand where they are. You need to validate them at that point. Say, I understand why you feel like that. That goes a long way toward countering negativity. The second thing is find a place where you can agree with them. You don't have to agree with everything they said. But if you can, try to find something you can agree about. And if you share some of their frustrations about something, tell them that. You're responding negatively in a way with them, but not against them. And that was going to relax and open the person up a little bit. It would work with you too, if someone were doing it with you. And it helps them to feel they're not alone. You're not further isolating them out there. And you're going to need to be specific about that too. And third, in this Harvard Business Review article, it says to find out what they are positive about and reinforce it. This doesn't mean trying to convince them to be positive. It means giving attention to whatever positive feelings they already have. And the chances are they will have shown some. It's unusual to find somebody who's absolutely negative about everything. And if it does turn out they are absolutely negative, then you need to be sure they see you supporting others who have shown some positivity. And the idea is to give positive attention to positive feeling. And offer concrete hope. It's concrete because it's based on actual positive feelings people have rather than harping on positive feelings you think they should have. In other words, I may think you should be positive about something, but if you're not positive about it, I can tell you that all day, you're not positive about it. But if I find something you are positive about and I agree with you on it, then I have reinforced those positive feelings. And it's not easy to do because we have to fight our own emotions here. You know, it's not, if I hear you being negative about something, it is not emotionally natural for me to agree to understand why you're so negative, because my immediate response is, why in the world would you think, how could anybody think that? That's sort of my response at times. Well, that's the wrong response. If you have any intentions of changing that person, that's the wrong response. It may be more emotionally satisfying for you to blow off at them, but that's not going to do anything. And again, I'm talking about employing not somebody you want to fire, somebody you think is valuable, but it's just going negative, and you really do need them to change a little bit. And, you know, you can't change them. They sort of have to change themselves. That's what this is about. You sort of help them change themselves in that. And you know, when you begin to listen to people, and, you know, the solution is also many of us, if somebody will come in with negative with us, and you know, as leaders, you've all probably felt like this at times, you just want to fire them. All right, I've had it with you. I want to fire you. But there may be times when firing is justified, but firing somebody on the moment is almost never the right thing to do. Number one, you get some kind of legal issues doing that. Number two, it's just not the right thing to do. It's not a rational reaction. You need to do that. And you know, when you begin to understand them, what you may find that there's something underlying that negativism, maybe fear. It may well be that there's things going on in the company that are changes they don't understand, and they're afraid of them. Last thing you can begin to do is to praise positive. When somebody really comes up and says something positive, we all know people that come into a room and they kind of light the room up. You need to publicly, in front of everybody, make sure everybody sees that you do that. Now, the truth of the matter is, it's much easier to say that than to do it. That's true for me, too. It's very hard to do it, as a matter of fact. But we need to do it. All right, I want to close with a few other tips on dealing with negative people. This is a guy named David Lee, who's from the an organization called the Human Natural Work deal. And here's what he says, a couple things you can say to people. Your behavior is negatively affecting me, the team, the business, and your value as an employee. However, I do want you to speak up when you have a different point of view. I do value perspectives that can see the potential downside of ideas. That's a skill of yours I don't want to lose. I need you to learn how to say your point of view in a more inviting way, though. And I need you to be more open-minded to other points of view. There's a difference in seeing potential landmines and being convinced that our perspective is the only valid one. The first attitude is useful there, buddy. The second attitude is not. So how do you accomplish that? You know, one of the things that I think you can do is unless you absolutely have a reason to believe otherwise, assume positive intent. When somebody comes to you to complain about something, assume positive intent. Again, that's easier said than done, isn't it? Because that's not our natural tendency. When somebody comes to me and complains, my immediate hair on the back of my neck response is they have negative intent about this. Well, fight that down. Assume they have positive intent. That will change how you listen to that complaint and help you to do something about it. You may have to explain to them what you're saying. You know, if we simply criticize their approach and we don't acknowledge their positive intent, they're likely to feel like their concerns and opinions are unwelcome. And believe me, people do get that message. So it's important that we do make them understand that we do appreciate their input. But sometimes you're going to have to explain what you're saying, what you're not saying. You may be saying, I understand your input, but I don't agree with your conclusion there. You may have to be very clear about that. Don't be so careful about being polite, and you should always be polite, but don't be so careful about being polite that you're not clear. You know, there's times in like this where clarity does matter. When you can say, I think you're trying to help us. I appreciate your input to this. I understand you're doing this to help. I don't agree with that assessment. And here's why I don't agree with that assessment. I mean, if you can put it that way, do it to help people off. And the other thing is to ask them if they understand. You know, that's a simple thing to ask people that many of us don't do. After, you know, you'll talk with somebody, and then at the end of it, you say, "Do you understand where I'm coming from on this?" Ask them that question, and you know, if the other person doesn't understand where you're coming from, it's not going to do any good. It's kind of hard to have a productive conversation there if they do not understand why you would think that way. Well, then you may have to spend more time going back to the beginning of it. Hope you've enjoyed today's program. I'm very positive about our business. I hope you're positive about yours. It doesn't mean there's not negative things pop up once in a while, and when it does, deal with it. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Catch the podcast if you missed it on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.